The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Tonight, an unprecedented move from the January 6th committee. Subpoenas issued to five of their own, including the House's top Republican. But is it all too little too late? And escalating threats from the Kremlin as one of Russia's neighbors pushes to join NATO. What it all could mean for the war in Ukraine. Plus, the inside story of last year's GameStop surge. We preview the new MSNBC documentary on how real-life players took on Wall Street as the 11th hour gets underway on this Thursday night. Good evening. Once again, I'm Stephanie Ruhle. 180 days from the midterm elections. And just hours ago, the January 6th committee did something never done before. Less than a month before public hearings on the investigation, the committee today issued subpoenas to their own House colleagues, requesting they come and testify about the insurrection. The five subpoenaed Republicans include caucus leader Kevin McCarthy, Andy Biggs of Arizona, Mo Brooks of Alabama, Jim Jordan of Ohio, and Scott Perry of Pennsylvania. All are staunch allies of former President Trump, and all refuse to comply with earlier requests and invites from the committee to appear voluntarily.
These are people who were involved in discussions with the president. They were in communication with White House staff on January 6th, leading up to it. Some were involved in the effort to overturn the election. Some spoke at the rally before the attack. One has said publicly that the president called him to rescind the election.
The committee wants to talk to McCarthy about his heated call with Trump during the riot. Investigators want to know what Biggs knows about the Stop the Steal efforts. They hope Brooks can tell them more about Trump's ongoing claims that he be returned to the White House. He is the one who urged people to, quote, kick ass and take names at the rally just before the riot. The committee also wants to ask Jordan about plans to overturn the election and to question Perry about the plot to replace the acting U.S. Attorney General. All across the board, they want to ask about how they're pushing the big lie. It's very important to note Kevin McCarthy has been heard on tape talking about how to get Trump out of office shortly after the riot. He then ran off to Mar-a-Lago and made up with Trump. Today, McCarthy was on the Hill fielding questions about these new subpoenas. He and a few other Republican targets were defiant and dismissive.
My view on the committee has not changed. They're not conducting a legitimate investigation. It seems as though they just want to go after their political opponents.
The fact that they send it to the press before they send it to the members just proves it's all about headlines. This whole thing's a charade.
I think this is an illegitimate committee that and they don't really have the authority to issue subpoenas, in my opinion. So we don't want to dignify what they're doing. This has been a witch hunt from day one.
In my opinion, several federal judges have already ruled on the committee's legitimacy. And today, the chairman and his colleagues made it very clear they have the right to resort to subpoenas.
I think the committee believes that we have that authority, and we felt comfortable enough that now was the time to do it.
I have every reason to believe that people receiving subpoenas today will comply with their legal duty, and I would say moral duty, to cooperate with an investigation into an attack on Congress.
Now, we have information from other sources that lead us to believe that each one of these individuals who are our colleagues have information the committee needs to tell the full story.
Could there be more subpoenas for other members of the House and or Senate?
It's possible.
While Trump's allies in Congress are battling January 6th investigators, he himself may now have another legal fight on his hands. This one concerns those classified White House records that ended up guess where? Mar-a-Lago. The New York Times reporting federal prosecutors have begun a grand jury investigation into whether those records were mishandled. Authorities are also asking for interviews with former Trump White House aides. With that, let's bring in our experts, Ashley Parker, Pulitzer Prize winning White House bureau chief for The Washington Post. She has added another Pulitzer to her arsenal this week for her team's coverage of the January 6th riot. Congratulations, Ashley. We also have with us Luke Broadwater, congressional reporter for The New York Times, and my dear friend Tali Farhadian-Weinstein, a former federal and state prosecutor here in New York. She clerked for Merrick Garland and Justice Sandra Day O'Connor. It is 11 o'clock p.m. I am going to try to stay as calm as I possibly can, but I warn you all, I'm pretty fired up. When I hear Jamie Raskin say he fully believes that they will fulfill their moral duties and comply with these subpoenas, I'm not sure why he thinks that based on what we've seen for the last 4 years, but let's get to it. Luke, serving subpoenas to your colleagues in Congress, many people have been asking for this for months, but it's a huge undertaking and a huge risk. Why do it now?
Well, they're really out of other options. The January 6th committee is coming up on an important set of hearings in June. And there's a key avenue of the investigation, which is basically left unexplored. And that is the role members of Congress played. Now, they have information from other sources. They've been able to compile a record of what some of these members of Congress did. But so far, every single letter that this committee has sent to a Republican member of Congress has been rebuffed. No one has been willing to come in voluntarily. And so there was a lot of debate internally on this committee about how they should approach this, how they can get people to come in. They did not want to have to issue subpoenas, but they really feel like they have no other choice at this point, that the only chance they have for getting any Republican in Congress to come forward and testify about what they know about January 6th is to issue a subpoena. And you're right, it is unprecedented outside of the Ethics Committee, at least in modern history, for there to be a subpoena of a sitting member of Congress by a congressional committee. But I would also note that it is unusual also for members of Congress to fight an investigation and not want to come in. If you look at some of the previous investigations carried out by Republicans, Democrats did participate with those investigations. I mean, Hillary Clinton famously sat for something like 18 hours of the Benghazi hearings, and I'm sure she didn't think that that was a totally above board investigation. So, yes, we are in unprecedented times.
Which we have been for years now. So let's start running the clock, because Ashley, Axios is reporting that if Republicans take the House next year, essentially this year, that the committee should be prepared for removals, retaliatory subpoenas, and even impeachments. What is at stake if these congresspeople run the clock, they don't ever testify, and then Republicans take the House? Then what happens?
Well, it's just in some ways, as Axios reported, and this was one of the concerns, that when you take an unprecedented step to subpoena your colleagues, there is a belief among Democrats that they will probably lose the House, and the issues that Republicans and former President Trump have long been hammering, like Joe Biden's son Hunter and his business dealings and his laptops, will be totally fair game in their eyes. For investigations, for subpoenas, and also that it sets a precedent. If Republicans don't show up in this case, then what do Democrats do when they're subpoenaed? If Republicans show up and simply stonewall and are not particularly helpful, is that what Democrats then do when the table are turned? And finally, you saw a lot of these January 6th House members today asking, what next? You know, what if they don't show up for their testimony? Will they hold them in contempt, which would be even more unprecedented for a sitting member of Congress than even issuing subpoenas? So there's going to be a bar and a precedent set here, a red line drawn that members of both parties will remember going forward.
Precedence matters-ish. It didn't matter for 4 years during the Trump administration, when people set their hair on fire day in and day out, and then Trump basically faced no consequences. So, Tali, when you look at the clock here, the midterms are only 180 days away. Tell me, once you're served a subpoena, when do you actually have to sit? Do you have to?
Well, the question of do you have to really depends, I think we're learning, on where the subpoena comes from, because the defiance of the January 6th committee is just becoming a regular fact of life. This is totally unprecedented, and I think it's really showing us that our constitutional system is really not equipped to deal with this kind of intra-party, intra-branch fighting, the calling of each other's bluffs, and that these subpoenas may in fact never be answered, and may actually spotlight the difference between a congressional subpoena and a subpoena from DOJ.
Then doesn't it reveal that congressional oversight has no teeth?
Well, there are a lot of questions here, Stephanie, but one thing that seems for sure to me is that the actions of these Republican congressmen are destroying the ability of Congress to bring congressional investigations. Because if you can just say, well, I just don't think that's a legitimate investigation, then just as you say, it kind of does defang the entire thing.
I want to play a clip of what committee member Zoe Lofgren said earlier to our colleague Nicole Wallace.
Has the committee ruled out criminal referrals for members of Congress?
Well, we haven't discussed any of that. Right now, we want to hear from them.
Luke, let's get real. They're not going to hear from them. We are talking not just about a political party, but a specific group of Republicans whose signature is owning the libs. None of us could sit down and get an interview, an honest interview, with any of those sitting Republicans right now. They wouldn't. It's not in their agenda. So are Democrats being naive with this idea, you know, we think they're going to do the right thing. We're anxious to hear from them. They're not going to hear from them.
Yeah, I noticed every single member of the committee today had the same talking point, which was they did not want to talk about what's the logical next step if the members of Congress refuse to participate. And that is a contempt referral, which does carry jail time and a heavy fine. And they've used it against four different potential witnesses already, including a former member of the House, Mark Meadows. So they've been very reluctant to say that that's where this could potentially go. And maybe they won't ever take that step. But that is the threat that's hanging over someone's head when you issue a subpoena. If you talk to some of the witnesses that have gone before the January 6th committee that did not want to go, they all say, I didn't have $10,000 or $100,000. I don't have enough money to fight a criminal charge. So I went and I testified and I gave them whatever emails and texts I had. And that was that. And so that same threat now does exist to the members of Congress who have received these subpoenas. Now, they have a little bit of a better argument than just a random witness, because there are certain protections in the Constitution for members of Congress, especially for hauling them into court over their official actions. But a lot of these things that they participated in were not official actions. And it's hard to see how necessarily the protections in the speech and debate clause would protect those. So I do think if it comes to it, we could be facing a showdown here if these Republican members of Congress do not show up for their depositions.
I want to quickly change the subject before we run out of time. Ashley, you have been covering this baby formula shortage. It is a scary and confusing situation. We're going to dig into it tomorrow night. But for now, the White House is discussing it. What are they saying they could potentially do?
So today they unveiled a couple of different steps they plan to take. One is increasing imports of baby formula. Right now, about 98% is produced in the United States. Another is directing state attorneys general and the FTC to deal with price gouging on the formula market. People who sort of recognize the fear of parents with young children buy that formula and then try to charge it for an incredible upsell. And the third thing they rolled out was taking sort of federal assistance program known as WIC, which allows people to buy women and children to buy certain products, including formula, and easing some of the restrictions and cutting some of that bureaucratic red tape to allow them to do that more easily.
Tali, the Department of Justice is also investigating Trump's handling of sensitive records from the White House. How big of a deal is this? You know, we're hearing Trump could be questioned. People in his White House could be questioned. But a lot of questions or requests for questions are already out there for months on an assortment of topics.
Yeah, well, Stephanie, it would have been unthinkable for the department not to investigate this. The department typically investigates the mishandling of classified information, not necessarily to bring criminal charges, but just to figure out what were we exposed to when this material was mishandled. But I think that it's possible that there's more to it here. For one, I think it's just implausible for anyone who was involved in the mishandling of these boxes to say that they didn't know, and prosecutors would have to prove that they knew, that the law was you can't move this stuff around. And, you know, in my experience around classified documents, you're told all the time, regularly and routinely, what the rules are. And I'll tell you, on my mind is a prosecution from just a few months ago in February by the U.S. attorney in Hawaii against a young woman who took some classified documents to her hotel room, apparently so she could work on them at night. And she was prosecuted. She was sent to prison. And the U.S. attorney said, it doesn't matter if your motives were benign. If you knew that you weren't supposed to do that, it's really important that we enforce the law that keeps this material safe.
All right, then. Tali Farhadi and Weinstein, Ashley Parker, Luke Broadwater, thank you all for starting us off tonight. When we come back, he has been posting angry comments about these new subpoenas to members of Congress. Author turned activist Don Winslow on his angry pivot to politics. And later, how seriously should we take the saber rattling from Russia now that one of its neighbors is eager to join NATO? The 11th hour just getting underway on this Thursday night, with flags flying at half staff to remember the 1 million gone from COVID tonight.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
The threat to our system of government was very large, and we need to hear from all of the parties who have information so we can get the complete picture so we can protect our country going forward.
The question is, will we ever actually hear from all the parties? Kevin McCarthy and the four other House Republicans are supposed to appear before the end of the month, but one New York Times bestselling author turned activist made it very clear today he ain't holding his breath. We welcome to the show this evening Don Winslow. His latest book, City on Fire, the first in a new trilogy, but it will be his last series. He's retiring from writing to focus on one thing, political activism. Don, welcome. You, my friend, are not shy about your frustration with the January 6th committee. Today you posted this. After 16 months, the January 6th committee finally subpoenaed Kevin McCarthy, Jim Jordan, and three more. But it doesn't matter. It's too late. Hearings are next month. McCarthy already said he would not cooperate. This is all theater. None of these people will ever testify on TV or under oath. I get it. You're mad.
I'm mad.
What should the committee have done differently?
Well, started much earlier. It took 6 months to form this committee. It took 1 week after the John Kennedy assassination to form that committee. They should have issued subpoenas immediately instead of issuing invitations. What's an invitation? What is a courtesy meeting? Why are we bringing people in behind closed doors and telling them or asking them, please talk to us, please talk to us, when we saw them committing crimes? It's ridiculous. Now we're 16 months into this thing, and we're just now issuing subpoenas. How are we going to enforce these subpoenas, Stephanie?
So do you think Democrats are being naive when they talk about moral obligations? In that last segment, I heard the word unprecedented over and over. For 4 years, we talked about how things were unprecedented and they wouldn't happen again. But here we are.
Well, everything's been unprecedented. Let's start with a presidential candidate paying hush money to a porn star. Let's start with a presidential candidate making fun of a disabled reporter. Let's talk about a man who came on your network and said that he, fired Jim Comey in order to shut down the Russian investigation. Precedent, 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 precedent. How many unprecedented things do we need to take action here?
Then have you lost faith in Democrats? Because at the end of the day, if they're expecting Republicans to do the right thing, the only person they should look to is Merrick Garland, who would be on the Supreme Court today if Republicans did do the right thing.
Yeah, if the Republicans had a moral obligation or whatever that phrase was, Merrick Garland would be on the Supreme Court. What we're looking for now, what we absolutely need to do is put heavy, heavy pressure on Merrick Garland and the Department of Justice to pursue this investigation, because it's too late now for this committee to do it. The clock's going to run out.
Let's talk about different consequences, though, because remember when Trump was running again and people said he just wants to stay in office to avoid consequences. Since he left office, what are those consequences? Jared and Ivanka are richer than ever. Trump remains the most powerful man in the Republican Party. And I don't see anybody who's going through real punishment.
There have been no consequences. We live in a world without consequences, except, sadly, the consequences are to us. You saw it the other day with overturning Roe v. Wade. That was a consequence.
So is this why you're leaving writing to go full-time activist? What's making you do this?
January 6th, largely. Look, it's been on my mind since 2016, since the Trump election. And, you know, I've been very active on Twitter. My partner, Shane Salerno, and I produce these videos together. I think they've had some effect. The candidates tell us so. We've had over 250 million views of these videos. So I think we are getting something done. We're speaking to people. I think that we're at an existential point in American democracy. We're in an existential crisis. Either we're going to move ahead as a country that guarantees rights for everybody, regardless of race or gender or sexual orientation, or we're going to fall back into the sort of shoddy, sorry fascism represented by Trump and his imitators. I'm at a great point in my career. This career has been fantastic to me, you know, better than I'd ever dreamed of. But now is a time for me to pay it back. And I think that my best effort should be in this fight.
How worried are you? We're heading into the midterms that we're not talking about voting rights legislation. We were months ago, weeks ago. It's not happening now. And if voting rights aren't protected, none of this matters.
Absolutely. I'm very worried about it. What did happen to the voting rights argument? And also, one thing we need to focus on are the Secretary of State races in these various states.
Because tell us why.
Well, because you have radical Republicans who are, you know, promulgating the big lie about the stolen election, running for those offices. They'll control how the votes go, how the votes are counted in those states. So we could be in deep trouble in our democracy if enough of those people get into those offices.
Well, Don Winslow, you are out there putting up a fight. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I hope to speak to you soon.
Thanks for having me. My pleasure.
Coming up, Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine began 11 weeks ago tonight. Up next, the Kremlin's new threat to expand the conflict when the 11th hour continues.
Finland has been integrating with NATO for basically 30 years. And we have always said for the past 20 years that joining NATO is one of the options that we have. So I think you just rightly said it, it's a step, it's not a leap. So I think we've been communicating also to the Russians that this may someday happen. And I think now the day has come.
Russia now threatening to retaliate after Finland's leaders called for joining NATO without delay. The Russian Foreign Ministry said in a statement this, Finland joining NATO is a radical change in the country's foreign policy. Russia will be forced to take retaliatory steps, both of a military, technical, and other nature, in order to stop threats to its national security arising. With us tonight to discuss, Ben Rhodes, former deputy national security advisor for President Obama and an MSNBC political contributor, and retired four-star U.S. Army General Barry McCaffrey, a decorated combat veteran of Vietnam and a former battlefield commander in the Persian Gulf. General, I turn to you first. Russia taking retaliatory steps. That's vague and scary. What does it mean?
Well, you know, a couple of days ago, they flew allegedly nuclear-armed aircraft into and near Finnish airspace. It's an astonishing display of strategic incompetence. They are inviting Finland and Sweden to join NATO. They up the threat in a way to what, alleviate their fears? So it's complete nonsense. Finland's got a million-man armed forces if they call up all their reserves. Russia has been incompetent in trying to dominate Ukraine. Got 60% of their combat ground combat power in there, half their air force. They're in no position to threaten Finland. What, with nuclear weapons? Putin has a cascading series of disasters now taking place. He's out of ideas. He's out of options. It's a tragedy for the Russian people, among other people.
So how mad is Putin? If Finland joins NATO, what does it mean for Russia, Ben?
Well, keep in mind that one of the rationales for Vladimir Putin launching this war was to push back against NATO encroaching upon Russia's borders. With Finland joining NATO, poised to join NATO, we're talking about doubling the amount of territory upon which NATO is on Russia's borders. And you talk about Sweden joining as well. These are countries that maintain neutrality through the Cold War. I mean, just think about that. Even in the context of that conflict, they maintain neutrality as a core element of their foreign policy. Vladimir Putin's actions have brought about NATO expansion, the very thing that he aimed to prevent. And I'm sure, as General McCaffrey knows, these are capable militaries in Sweden, in Finland. And so what he's done is he's significantly strengthened NATO, significantly isolated Russia, while demonstrating in Ukraine that the Russian military isn't nearly as strong as they were seeking to project before this war began just 2 or 3 months ago.
Then, Ben, is this a no-brainer for Finland? What's their downside?
Well, I think the downside is, in the past, you know, Russia is a big neighbor, and Russia is a country that they have to live next door to. And they did want to maintain a degree of neutrality. Even as the ambassador said, they've been taking steps in this direction. They do a lot with NATO. They do a lot with NATO militaries. But the reality is, for them, NATO is the ultimate insurance policy. And nobody can look at Vladimir Putin and not wonder, where is he going to go next? And once they are a member of NATO, they have that ironclad Article 5 commitment to common defense, that if Russia moves an inch into Finnish territory, the United States and all NATO countries are committed to their defense. And that, I think, is the insurance policy that they're looking for, watching what's happening in Ukraine right now.
General, Republican Senator Rand Paul delaying approval of an additional $40 billion in aid to Ukraine until next week. What do you think about that?
Well, it's astonishing. Obstructionist. He's drawing attention to himself. He's a very erratic political leader. His own caucus widely supports moving this bill through. He's going to delay it for a week or so, and then it will pass. Another underscoring. Look, Article 1 of the Constitution deals with Congress. It's the most important of the three supposedly co-equal branches of government. And it's barely functioning because of this partisan warfare, primarily because of the Republicans. However, on this issue, there is a bipartisan consensus that U.S. national security risks are significantly at risk if Ukraine goes under to Russian aggression. So Rand Paul is operating against our own national security interests.
Ben, Russia is now calling for a UN Security Council meeting to present new evidence of alleged use of biological laboratories in Ukraine. There's a lot of people out there who can't even believe that Russia can do or say anything with the United Nations. How are they going to respond to this?
Look, this has been one of their conspiracy theories for some time now, and it gets a lot of traction on Russian television. I think what this performance is about is, you know, Stephanie, the audience is not really the United States or Europe or Japan, South Korea. There are other countries that are sitting on the fence. There are countries like China that are kind of tacitly backing Russia. And these kinds of performative antics, frankly, I think are more designed for those audiences to just kind of sow doubt. Is there any truth to these Russian claims? And there's obviously not. It's nonsense. It's garbage. But I think they constantly need to be putting forward narratives that sow doubt about the U.S. role here, that try to present this as a conflict where, you know, Russia may be at fault, and like most people watching around the world think Russia is at fault, but they might also be open to a Russian narrative about NATO's culpability. And so this is the theater of the absurd. I think the tragedy is they've turned the United Nations Security Council into a farce. You know, the United Nations Security Council meeting at the dawn of this war was chaired by Russia, the aggressor. And this is the body of the United Nations that was founded to prevent precisely this kind of war. And so one of the casualties and ripple effects of this war is the degree to which they made a mockery of the international system that was set up after World War II with the United Nations at its center. And this is going to be just yet another sad display of Russia's disregard and disrespect for those institutions.
But isn't that part of what Russia wants to do all along? Putin wants to destroy the reputations of these institutions of the West.
Yeah, absolutely. He wants to make them look feckless. He wants to demonstrate the leverage he has within them as a permanent member of the United Nations Security Council. He wants to use them as a venue to spread Russian propaganda and conspiracy theories, like this absolutely nonsense assertion about biological weapons. That's part of his effort to kind of sow chaos and make it seem like nothing matters, no institutions matter, no norms matter. He can do whatever he wants as an aggressor in Ukraine. And frankly, you know, there are audiences that will listen to that, including some, by the way, in the United States that echo Putin's talking points. But decisively, he is losing the battle for public opinion, at least in the democratic world.
Well, then what we're going to need to do, Ben, is just tell the truth every darn night. Ben Rhodes, General Barry McCaffrey, thank you both for joining us. Coming up, Diamond Hands will preview the new MSNBC documentary on last year's GameStop rally that highlights some of the real-life players that took on Wall Street when the 11th hour continues. It was a moment and a movement that captivated America. Back in January of last year, shares of a company people didn't even think about, GameStop, surged more than 1,600% in 2 weeks, a retailer that sold video games. Well, a group of individual day traders, many of whom had never played in the markets before, ever, no financial education, no background, banded together en masse online to find a way to take on Wall Street. A new documentary from NBC News Studios called Diamond Hands, The Legend of Wall Street Bets, airs this Sunday on MSNBC at 10 p.m. And it reveals the story behind that revolt. And not just what it says about investing and trading, but what the real story is about: humanity, culture, counterculture. Here's a clip from that film.
I wrote this post called The Greatest Short Burn of the Century. My brother, who's an actor, is going to come and read it for me, because it's too cringy for me to do it myself.
What's up, gamblers? Jeff Amazon here. Feel bad about missing the gain train on Tesla? Fear not. Something much greater and stupider is here. You know Citadel, the market maker that took all our money today? Now we finally won't be at the mercy of the market makers. Instead, we're gonna temporarily join forces with the Galactic Empire and hijack the Death Star. Our choice of weapon, GameStop.
This seems crazy, this seems ridiculous, but it's real. I want to bring in the Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Zach Hanapari. He directed this film, and co-producer Erica Fink, director of development for NBC News Studios. She got her start as a business and tech reporter. That's why she fell in love with this story, as did I. I had the privilege of working with you both on this project. A lot of people in the beginning thought this was a Wall Street story, a market story, but it really wasn't. Explain to us, Zach, what drew you to it, because the real parallels here, these outsiders, they're a lot like the outsiders in society and politics who have said, the system doesn't work for me anymore, I'm going to make a change. And then they bust into the most impenetrable business out there, Wall Street.
Yeah, I think the, you know, for a lot of the work that myself and my co-director, Drake Hooper, have been doing, we've been in Flint, Michigan, Paradise, California. And it's really just about finding people that have interesting stories to tell and through their experience, what they're going through, what they're feeling, what it feels like to be them. You know, seeing what the bigger picture story is, right? And in this situation, pandemic, stimulus, surplus, Fed changing, all like changing the game entirely, all these people at home, and they found something to invest in, and it was completely unique. It was GameStop. No one saw value in it except for this like group of investors on subreddit. And that was so unique. I mean, there's just never been anything like it. They took that and they almost broke the system with it, but as the system often does, it shut them out just when it got good.
Erica, you were the key person that brought all of this together. It was months before any of us were even thinking about GameStop, right? The only time GameStop was in my mind is when I had to buy a gift card for an 8-year-old birthday party.
Yeah.
You had been tracking many of these traders, these people, for months. Why? What was it about this story?
Well, that's the thing, Steph. So my background was in tech journalism. And so lurking in Reddit was sort of a happy place for me. And
that's weird.
Yeah, admittedly, it is. And I noticed in April of 2020, so about 9 months before the GameStop short squeeze, that Wall Street Bets, the subreddit, was really gaining steam. Stimulus checks had just come out. Retail traders were on the rise. And this group, where people were betting that they would drink their own pee if they lost the value of their 401ks in a single day in the market, or they would lick a toilet seat if Tesla stock went up, was suddenly going viral. And I was looking at this group of people and I was thinking, despite outward appearances, I think this group of people may one day move the market. And in fact, they did.
They did, but they didn't win, right? People keep thinking this is a story of David versus Goliath, but they didn't. So in the end, do they win?
You know, they didn't win, but there was a nihilism that was really present in that group of people. This, I am going to stick it to the man. I'm going to bet the farm. And they, by doing this, they kind of created this conversation about why that nihilism exists. And it's about this sort of inequity, and it's about this generational divide in wealth.
It sure is. I want to play another important part, I think, from the film. Watch this.
I sold all my shares at $120 a share. I watched $1 million go down the drain. $1 million. And that's what's going through my head. $1 million. This is my family's future. This is my future. This is time with my kids that I could have bought back. I felt I didn't feel like I gained $350,000. I feel like I lost $1 million.
But that's the thing here. At the end, lots of the biggest players did end up making lots of the money. Right now, here we are. Markets are roiling again. Markets are down. These people could lose it all. What's your takeaway at the end of this?
It's probably a little bit unpopular, but I think Goliath might have actually won, which is a little bit of a shame. You know, this was a real... I think at the end, like, we're going to step back and go, the system created the opportunity for this whole diamond, the whole GameStop squeeze to happen. And then they shut the door on it at the same time. And I think that within that, you know, it just speaks to sort of a greater inequality that I think kind of crosses over to all these American stories right now. Like, we're in the middle of a great battle over the American dream, who has access to it and who doesn't. And I think within this story, we saw exactly who the system is set up for, and it's not for the retail investor necessarily.
Why the name Diamond Hands?
It was, you know, it's a mentality that these guys have.
We don't know what it means, right? This is not a Wall Street audience. Tell us what it means.
The subreddit, Wall Street Bets.
Isn't that funny? It's not a Wall Street audience or a subreddit audience. Yes.
Yeah, totally. The subreddit Wall Street Bets, you know, it's a group of investors. At this point, I think it's up to 10 million investors. And they have their own language. They have their own lingo. And
Erica just dumped her water over there. I want you to know, Erica was very worried about coming on TV tonight. She said, nope, I'm behind the camera. I don't go in front of the camera. And here she is, just spilled her water. Guess what? Allie Vell, she did it last week.
You know what? You're in good company.
All right, sorry. Back to Diamond Hands.
Totally forgot where we're going with this. So Diamond Hands essentially references, you know, how strong you are with your stock. So if you have Diamond Hands, you're holding on to that stock up and down as the waves crash all around you. If you have paper hands, you're selling too soon, right? But at the same time, diamond hands can be its own problem. You're holding on too long. And I think what happened with a lot of people when Robinhood shut down trading, they just kept holding, hoping that the system would correct itself. And it totally backfired on
them. And why did many of them hold on? Because they're not just holding on for a winning trade. They're holding on for dear life because they're hoping for a different life. That's why you need to see this film. Zach, Erica, thank you both so much. Honored to be part of it. Again, you can watch Diamond Hands, The Legend of Wall Street Bets, this Sunday at 10 p.m. right here on MSNBC. And scores of those Wall Street Bets traders, the ones we were just talking about, they're not just big in meme stocks. Many of them have taken their gains, and in a lot of cases, their life savings, to another outsider's investing favorite, cryptocurrencies. And we've been watching the stock market continue to drop this week. It has been an absolute disaster for cryptocurrencies. Some are calling it a death spiral. Others say crypto may be approaching its 2008 moment. That's why this matters. In a one-day sell-off, $200 billion was erased from the entire crypto market. I know this is confusing to a lot of people. You're saying I'm not involved. But when moves are this big, there are knock-on effects that could impact all of us. We're going to dig into that tomorrow night. We'll be back with more in a few.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater. And this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
The last thing before we go tonight, asking the tough questions. Sixth grader and superstar Nick News reporter Rory Hu has already made a name for herself for her interviews with big gets like Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and Apple CEO Tim Cook. Well, today, the California native and Hamilton enthusiast, she was at the White House back at it with the tough questions. Take a look.
Hi, I just have a question and a follow-up. So first, there are concerns about the negative impacts of social media on the mental health of children. Will the White House take any actions to prevent these adverse effects?
As a mom myself, Rory, my daughter's younger than you. She'd think you were very hip and cool, no doubt. This is a huge concern that I have, we have, the president has, is the impact of social media platforms, their enormous power, and the fact that it is largely unchecked. It is certainly something that our Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy, has talked about in terms of the impact of social media platforms and what the impact they're having on the mental health, the self-esteem of young people. And so I would say the president, the first lady, all of us believe that more needs to be done.
And the internet has become a tool for children's education. A lot of students use the internet to learn. So how will the White House prevent children from getting misinformed from the internet?
Such a good question, too. Well, I know reporters like yourself and people that other kids listen to are good voices to provide accurate information. And you coming here and asking tough questions is an important part of that. I would say that, one of the things that we encourage parents to do is, make sure you are educating yourself on all of these platforms and what information is available and working with your kids to make sure they understand what's accurate and inaccurate. There are certainly steps the government can take, but there's also an ongoing development of new tools, and we as parents need to keep educating ourselves about what's out there so we can make sure our kids have access to good information, informative information. We watch a lot of animal videos in my house. That's all good and positive, and not access to information that's inaccurate, misleading, or problematic.
There you have it. The important voices leading Americans to a brighter future. My takeaway tonight, I'm betting on Rory. And on that note, I wish you all a very good night. From all of our colleagues across the networks of NBC News, thanks for staying up late with us. I'll see you at the end of tomorrow.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.